Hello, Sky Watchers. Thanks for listening to the Royal Observatory's Look Up podcast. I'm Jess.
And I'm Julienne. And we're going to highlight what to look for in the sky in April in this cosmic diary.
So, Leo is a lovely spring constellation high in the southern sky throughout the month. There's something in Leo for everyone. For those with very light polluted skies, two of the brightest stars, Regulus and Denebola, will be possible to spot. If you're lucky and you've let your eyes adjust to the darkness, you might also be able to make out the sickle, or backwards-shaped question mark asterism, which is the head of the lion. You can also watch the moon move through the constellation. The moon's orbital path across the night sky can be split into 27 equal segments, and it will spend approximately one day in each segment during its orbit around the Earth. These segments are known as lunar mansions or lunar stations, and they are used for timekeeping in many cultures, as well as having links to astrology. This April, the moon will pass in front of Leo between the 17th and 19th of the month. For those with dark skies, the full constellation, including the fainter stars such as Zosma and Chiron, will be able to be seen. And then, if you have access to a telescope, you can find many distant galaxies in this area of the sky. This includes the Leo triplet, just below the star Chiron. So the Leo triplet is a small collection of galaxies around 35 million light-years away from us, including M65, M66, and NGC 3628. What's interesting about these is that although they are all spiral galaxies, they're at different orientations, meaning they look very different in the sky. M65 and M66 are clearly spiral galaxies with the twisted arms of the stars visible, whereas we see NGC 3628 edge-on, and so its shape is less obvious to us. Another name for this galaxy, NGC 3628, is the Hamburger Galaxy. You'll have to find it for yourself if you want to judge how appropriate that name is. Other deep sky objects in Leo include spiral galaxies Messier 95 and 96, and the elliptical galaxy M105. There's lots to explore in this part of the sky.
The Lyrid meteor shower will be peaking between the 22nd and 23rd of April, although meteors might be spotted across the whole second half of the month, between the 14th and 30th of April. This meteor shower is not particularly active, with a predicted maximum of only 18 per hour, compared to up to 100 per hour for the more prolific Perseids, for example. The conditions are also not that favourable this year, with the peak just before the full moon. The bright lights from a full moon will make it harder to see meteors, so it might be better to go shooting star spotting before or after the maximum, when the night sky is darker. The Lyrids are known for sometimes leaving persistent trains in the sky. Now, these meteors can be seen in any part of the sky, but if you trace their path back, they would appear to originate from the constellation of Lyra, hence their name. However, their actual origin is Comet C/1861 G1, also known as Comet Thatcher. Comet Thatcher is named not after the British Prime Minister, but after the amateur astronomer Alfred Thatcher, who discovered the comet in 1861. You won't be able to see Comet Thatcher for yourself, as it's a long period comet, only returning to the inner solar system in about 250 years.
If you have access to a telescope or a pair of binoculars and you haven't yet spotted Comet 12P/Pons-Brooks, April will be your last chance to do so. This comet will be increasing in magnitude throughout April, but also getting closer to the Sun, with the perihelion, the closest approach to the Sun, occurring on the 21st of April. At this point, from our perspective, the comet will be low to the horizon, close to the setting Sun in the early evening, making it more difficult to spot. If you do want to find it for yourself, it will be in the western part of the sky, starting in Aries at the beginning of the month before a close approach with Jupiter on the 13th of April, and then moving through Taurus. It's predicted to be technically bright enough to be seen with the naked eye at magnitude 5, but the light from the sun in the early evening will mean that probably binoculars or a telescope will be needed. After disappearing from our evening skies, the comet will swing past the sun, with the closest approach to Earth happening on the 2nd of June, although at this point the comet will be in the daytime sky and not visible to us. After the comet passes by the Earth, it will head back to the outer solar system, not returning to our skies for another 70 years.
For parts of Canada, the United States, and Mexico, there will be a solar eclipse on the 8th of April. A total solar eclipse happens when the moon passes in between the sun and the earth, totally blocking the face of the sun and casting a shadow over one small part of our globe. These celestial events are relatively rare, and not only are they an exciting and awe-inspiring event to witness, but they are useful from a scientific perspective as well. Normally, the outer part of the sun's atmosphere, or the corona, is difficult to see compared to the much brighter surface. However, during an eclipse, as this light is blocked, the corona can be studied in much more detail, and scientists can use this time to collect data to help understand how energy is transferred from the sun to the solar wind. The eclipse can also be used to study the sun's impact on our atmosphere. All this will happen on the 8th of April, from observations taken on the ground and using satellite data. Something else that will make this event even more interesting is the presence of comet 12P Pons-Brooks in our skies. This comet will be above the horizon, but too dim to be seen with the sun in the sky. Therefore, once the moon is covering the sun, key-eyed astronomers might also catch a glimpse of this comet during the eclipse. For anyone not lucky enough to live in these specific areas, we will have to rely on photos and videos taken of the event. We won't be able to experience a total solar eclipse in the UK until 2090, but there are partial eclipses and lunar eclipses for us to enjoy in the years upcoming ahead.
If you take any photos of the night sky, please do tweet them to us at RMGAstronomers. You may also want to check out our night sky highlights blog on our website at rmg.co.uk. But for now, it's time for the cosmic news. Then I put the jingle in. Okay, welcome to the cosmic news section of our podcast, and welcome back for any regular listeners, because of course, last month we didn't do our standard podcast format. We instead had that fantastic interview with Professor Chris Lintott. So if you haven't listened to that, go back to March. I was like, when? What month is it? Go back to March and have a listen. But back to our standard cosmic news. Well, sort of standard cosmic news. So I am Jess. I'm the Astronomy Education Officer at the Royal Observatory in Greenwich. And I'm joined by Julienne this month.
Hello, everyone. I'm Julienne. I am the Assistant Planetarium Astronomer.
Fantastic. Thank you for joining us, Julienne. And in another deviation from the format, rather than us both bringing news stories, I've just brought you a bunch of news stories. Does that sound good?
That's fine by me.
Nice.
I love news.
I couldn't pick one single news story, so instead I've picked a sort of a theme for the news for this month. And my theme is human space exploration.
Ooh, very fun.
Yeah. Because, first of all, my first news story for you is that NASA is currently recruiting astronauts.
I did see this. Mm. I did get an email because I'm signed up to NASA's notifications and I got an email about it.
Would you consider applying to be an astronaut?
I don't know. I think it would be cool. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I could go through so much training or if I even could be able to, because I swear there's some requirements that you need, right?
One fairly major requirement is be an American citizen.
Right, yeah, that's not me, sorry.
Which neither of us are right now. I can tell you maybe you've got some of the other ones though. Because to be a NASA astronaut, they ask you to have a master's degree in a STEM field. So that includes things like physical sciences, biological sciences, engineering, maths.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you have a master's degree?
I do. In astrophysics.
Oh, so perfect.
There you go.
And then they want you to have a minimum of 3 years of related professional experience obtained after your degree. So it's not a thing for young grads, I guess.
Yeah. I don't think I have any professional experience, unfortunately, going to space.
Not of going to space, but you do have professional experience of being an astronomer.
Oh, that's true, yeah. That's true. I thought it was more of an active type of role that I had to take.
So one thing they look for astronauts is often sort of flight experience, like Earth flight experience, like plane experience. So they also say if you don't have 3 years of professional experience, instead, you could have 1,000 hours of pilot-in-command time, which I guess is flying planes.
I don't have that, sadly, do you?
Neither do I. I've never flown a plane.
No. Could be cool to, though.
And you also have to complete the long-duration flight astronaut physical.
Ooh.
doesn't specify what that is, but I imagine they want healthy people.
Very intense training, I guess.
Yeah, which is the part of it you didn't want, right?
Yeah, so I think I'm better off here on Earth.
But I just thought it was cool that they were currently recruiting for astronauts.
Yeah.
I also like that they recruit in the same way all jobs recruit, where they put out on job boards and people apply.
You just decide whether you want to go for it or not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, how much do you get?
Yeah, so being an astronaut is a job, right? It's a real job, like any other job. You apply, you have to have qualifications, you get accepted. So it has a salary. Do you know the salary for an astronaut?
I do not, but I hope it's going to be expensive for putting kind of your life on the line.
Yeah. Do you want to guess? It's in US dollars.
Okay. I guess like over 100,000 US dollars.
Oh, let me double check. So you're close with 100,000. Mm-hmm. They actually get $152,258 a year.
Wow.
Specific. I don't know why. Which is a decent salary.
That's a decent amount.
Yeah.
I mean, plus your travel costs and everything, right? You don't have to pay for that.
You think they expense things. If anyone is considering going for it, and you meet those requirements, go ahead. We're often asked about age ranges here at the observatory because we meet lots of children.
Yeah.
Currently, children can't be astronauts. But it does say there's no age restriction.
Oh.
The last recruitment, the ages were between 26 and 46.
Okay.
But that's just who they ended up picking.
Yeah.
But if you are thinking of applying, so last time they opened for applications was 2015, and 12,000 people applied.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how many got selected?
12.
12? Wow. It's a brutal application process.
Yeah.
Understandably so.
Mm-hmm. Imagine being the person who has to read 12,000 applications.
Yeah. I hope they split that one.
One of the reasons they are recruiting for astronauts is because there's lots of stuff coming up in human space exploration.
Mm, a lot of space missions, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you know where the sort of main aim is at the moment?
I know it's to the moon, right? With the Artemis missions. Yeah.
It actually says in the job application, it'll be the Artemis Generation Astronauts, because that moon mission thing is the Artemis mission. Mm. And they will explore and conduct experiments where humans have never been, the lunar South Pole.
Ooh, imagine going where no one's been before.
So yeah, that was one news story for you. That's we are recruiting for astronauts. Well, we're not NASA. Someone.
NASA will be.
And that's for getting people back to the moon with the Artemis missions. And then a linked news story, this is why I'm cheating and bringing three news stories effectively, is the test flight of the Starship spacecraft in March. Did you watch this at all?
I don't know anything. I'm not too sure.
Well, Starship we've spoken about before on the podcast, because it's part of the plan to get humans to the moon. So it's part of the Artemis mission. Specifically, it's going to be the Human Landing System, or the HLS, because everyone loves an acronym.
Yes.
So the idea is that this part of the spacecraft, this spacecraft design, will take humans from the lunar orbiter, which goes around the moon, to the lunar surface.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and NASA has done lots of sort of contracting out for this particular decade of programming, effectively. So the Starship spacecraft is being designed by SpaceX.
Oh, okay.
Which is famous for being the company Elon Musk, one of the companies Elon Musk runs.
Mm.
I dislike it mainly because it's called Starship, but it's going to the moon.
Should be called Moonship. I don't know if it has much of a ring to it.
I think if we say it enough, you know,
it'll click.
Yeah. Do you know anyone who works for SpaceX?
I don't know anyone that works for SpaceX.
So you can't get that in there for me.
No, sadly not. But one day.
So this was an uncrewed test flight of Starship. They're still building and designing this rocket, this spacecraft, so it isn't done yet. This was the third test flight. It was on the 15th of March, 2024. The first two sort of test flights were in 2023, so last year, and neither of them were particularly successful. They made the news mainly because they exploded fairly quickly. But this flight was way more successful. So it did still explode, but much later on, so it achieved lots of its mission aims. So it managed to launch off the the ground, which is, you know, great. So it launched, all the engines fired, which didn't happen before, and it gained speed and it reached orbital speeds. So it got enough speed going to enter Earth orbit, which the other one didn't. So it was the first one to reach orbital speeds. The idea was that it would then descend through the atmosphere and land again. That's when it exploded. So.
Well, step by step.
Yeah, step by step. There were no people on it. It was fine.
That was good.
At some point, there will be people on it.
We don't want that to explode.
Yeah. I guess, I don't know if it's in the job description for astronauts, but willing to sit on a rocket that might explode.
Yeah.
So it's a sort of a rocket, a spacecraft, which is being designed for a few purposes. So their contract with Artemis is to get humans to the moon's surface. But SpaceX's sort of long-term ambition is also to get humans to Mars. Would you be more willing to apply to be an astronaut, Julianne, if the destination was different?
That's a tough choice. I feel like anyway, it's just going to be a very interesting journey to becoming an astronaut. I feel like if I get past that curve of becoming an astronaut, going through all that stuff, I feel like I could go anywhere.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it's the Earth-based stuff that is the block for you.
Yeah. After that, I'll be fine.
See, for me, it's the getting in a very small space and being stuck in it.
I'm not a fan of that. That's not too good.
If someone could sort of knock me unconscious and I wake up in space, then I would go.
Yeah. Oh, that would be a nice way to go about it. Ooh. Just wake up in stars, space,
moon. That isn't the current plan. The idea is for the astronauts to be conscious.
I feel like that's a good idea.
But for anyone who hasn't heard of Starship, it is insanely big and powerful. It's 121 meters tall. It weighs 5,000 tons and it's 9 meters in diameter. So like a cross. That's quite big, right? And it can produce 7.5 million kilograms of thrust. So it's meant to get really heavy things like spacecraft full of astronauts and all their supplies and stuff into orbit or out of Earth's orbit and towards the moon. Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So we'll keep seeing these test flights in the news because they're going to keep going until they've got a rocket that works, hopefully. So there's another test flight planned for early May. So only next month they'll do another one. And then can I tell you a third bit of human spaceflight news?
Please tell me a bit.
Yeah. Have you heard of Starliner?
I don't think I have.
No, this one hasn't been in the news as much. Possibly because it's not SpaceX, and SpaceX makes the news quite a lot.
Yeah.
Another bad name. It's not going to the stars. It's going to the International Space Station.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So there used to be two main ways for astronauts to get to the International Space Station. There was the Soyuz, which launched from Kazakhstan. It was a Russian sort of cosmonaut system. And then there was the Shuttle, which was an American system. The Shuttle was decommissioned a long time ago now. So the Soyuz was the only way of transporting astronauts to and from. But then because of the sort of breakdown in political relations, although things were planned before this, they're looking for other ways of getting to the space station. And SpaceX has a crewed capsule they can send to the space station. It's called Dragon. Cool name.
Very nice name.
Yeah, I'm okay with Dragon.
Yeah.
And then there's another one that's been designed by Boeing, so by a different company.
Oh.
So that's what Starliner is. So their first ever crewed mission is going to be in May of this year, if it all goes to plan. So next month.
Wow.
Yeah.
The space mission. So many space missions.
I know, there's loads of them. So this will once again be American astronauts, but there'll be two of them. They're called Sonny and Butch, which sounds like a comic duo. That's great. And so far this spacecraft, the Starliner, has only had uncrewed launches. So this will be the first time people sit in it and attempt to get to the International Space Station with it.
Ooh.
Which is pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a couple of facts about Barry and Butch and Sonny for you, if you like.
Yeah, go for it.
So Barry, that's why I keep saying Barry. Butch's actual name is Barry Wilmore. Butch is his like nickname. And Sonny's full name is Sunita Williams. So that's the two astronauts, Barry and Sunita. Barry's been an astronaut since 2000.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's currently 61. He was in the Navy and he worked in technical jet aviation, so he was a pilot.
Oh, okay.
And he's got a Master's of Science in Electrical Engineering.
He ticks off all the requirements. Yeah, for the NASA astronaut.
I looked it up. I wanted to check. And he's been to space twice already. So I guess they want experienced astronauts for this because it's a very, it's a new spacecraft.
Makes sense.
And then Sunny has been an astronaut since 1998.
Oh!
Which I think is before you were born.
Yes. Yeah. That is before
if
I was
want,
born.
I can cut that out of the podcast if you don't want that on
no,
the podcast.
No, it's absolutely right. Fine. I was also born before Butch as well.
Oh, wow. We can really date Julian.
Try to guess my age.
So Butch has been an astronaut since before you were born, and Sunny. She's also a veteran of two space missions. She's got a Master of Science in Engineering Management,
ooh,
which I haven't heard of.
Yeah.
And she was also a naval test pilot, so another sort of pilot flying background. Yeah. And she's 58.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Imagine being able to say, yeah, I've gone to space twice.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not done.
And I'm not done yet. I'm still going.
So I just thought that was pretty cool.
That is very, very
yeah.
cool. Mm-hmm. So much space exploration in the next, well, year.
Yeah,
only.
Coming up. And I'm sure it will only increase because once SpaceX is sort of sorted, they'll have crewed flights as well. Mm. And then Artemis 2 is going to launch with crew and go round the moon.
Yes.
I think that's been pushed to 2026 or the end of 2025.
Yeah.
And then 2027 or 2028 is when they're planning to have humans on the moon.
Yes. Artemis 3. Coming back. Very, very exciting times.
It's going to be awesome.
Maybe. Maybe then I'll have the requirements to be an astronaut. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you've already got some of them.
Yeah.
You'll have to become an American citizen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. I will leave.
No, don't leave.
Not this room. Not the podcast. Just leave to...
the country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just to become an astronaut, maybe.
And then you'll come back.
And then I'll come back. Because after I've gone to space.
I don't think any of the astronomers at the Royal Observatory have been astronauts.
No.
So that would be quite cool.
That would be very, very cool. I could be the first one. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Unless anyone has any secret stories.
Imagine not telling anyone that you've been to space. we should say that... So this was all news about American astronauts, but it's not only American astronauts who are going to space.
Mm-hmm.
So the Chinese Space Agency is also planning to return to the moon, and the Indian Space Agency is also working on a human spaceflight program.
Oh, amazing.
And Artemis is a sort of joint mission, so it's NASA-led, but it also involves the UK Space Agency, the European Space Agency, Canadian Space Agency. So the idea is that you have all these partners and they all contribute money and equipment and things. Mm. And then in exchange, you get your astronauts to go as well.
Oh,
yeah.
Very fun.
Because even with Artemis 2, it's three Americans and one Canadian.
Oh, okay.
So hopefully in the future, some British astronauts
some
too.
UK astronauts as well. Very interesting to see. Mm. It's nice to see how everyone from different countries is kind of trying to reach the same sort of goal.
Yeah.
To explore space more. Mm. I find that very nice. No, this is very interesting. I know that SpaceX also want to do commercial space flights eventually for us commoners who aren't astronauts to travel to the moon, to space. Do you think these flights would help in that sense? I guess.
Yeah, I think especially for the moon, that would be long term rather than short term.
Mm.
So the first people to the moon are going to be astronauts with years or decades of experience and training and maybe representing like specific nations, because there is still a sort of nationalistic being first to the moon aspect, right?
Yeah.
But the more options there are, like the more different kinds of spacecraft and the more nations, the more companies involved, I think it'll become more likely for regular people to go to space. I imagine it's going to be quite expensive to get to the moon for quite some time.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know, maybe there'll be a little holiday resort on the moon.
Maybe. Would you go to a holiday on the moon, Jess?
I think I've read so many sci-fi books where people live on the moon, I think I'd have to. And if it's a holiday, I can definitely be unconscious for the journey.
And you just wake up after.
Yeah. No one needs me. My out of office is on.
I think we should all take a astronomer, Royal Observatory astronomer trip.
Group trip
to the moon. Nice team bonding time.
Because things like suborbital flights, they call it the vomit comets. You know, when you're in a plane that goes very fast up, and then down again, so you get the experience of weightlessness, sort of in like a padded, empty plane.
Yeah.
That used to be very rare, and that's a thing that people can pay to experience now.
Oh.
Sort of holiday trips to space are a long way off, but there are almost, I guess they are called private, there have been some private astronauts going to the International Space Station. So Axiom, which is a space agent company, not agency, along with SpaceX, has launched three missions to the International Space Station with astronauts. Aren't necessarily NASA astronauts, but like former NASA astronauts.
Oh, okay, so some kind of experience.
Yeah, so they're all people with experience and with training and like certification and stuff. Yeah. So it's not just people on the street who pay for it. But I guess that's the only current sort of private personal space flight.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you had fun. Yes. Thank you for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed hearing about the news and taking a look at what's going to be in our sky this month.
Yeah. So at the start of April, when this podcast should be coming out, join us on Twitter and let us know if you would want to be an astronaut, I think. Maybe we'll have two questions. Are you qualified? And if you want to. Separate questions.
Yeah.
Based on these qualifications, because it'll vary.
Yeah.
But that's it. Thank you so much for joining us, and keep looking up.
See ya!
Bye!
Bye!